Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. That we heard is preferred by most soccer moms on the way to practice. It's In Soccer We Trust, and I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside my former U.S. men's national team teammates Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And we are excited to not only discuss who should be in our front three on the upcoming roster for these June friendlies and Nations League games, but we're going to dive into our best jersey swaps of all time, which should be fun, and give our thoughts on the new leaked U.S. men's national team jersey as well. We have a great show lined up for you. Charlie, I'm coming to you first, though. How are you doing, my friend? Great to see you.
Great to see you as always. I'm amped for this show. I'm amped for every show. this is like my new fam every day, every Monday, Thursday, Friday. I'm like, let's go. I'm hyped for these. We've had incredible guests. And I think today with the jersey talk, the front three talk. Yeah, I'm really pumped.
And Heath, it looks like Charlie's already got the flex going. He's wearing a Sweden Zlatan Ibrahimovic jersey, so I assume he swapped with him, and I don't know if I can touch that, but Charlie's already flexing on us. That's great.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, when Charlie had obviously was complimentary of the guests we've had on, and I just haven't seen Charlie deliver on a guest yet, so I was just wondering who he's got down the pipeline. You know,
my guest is lined up next week.
Next week, we got a special guest.
I will say this. Tony Kroos and his brother Felix Kroos, who I played with in Germany, he was a young kind of up and coming player. Have a podcast together.
Drop something.
Yeah. Watch your toes. These names are falling really heavy.
Oh gosh.
And I was like, hey man, and I know that they have a podcast together. I know their podcast is in German. I was like, hey, we should do like cross promotion. And then I started to think like, who are we cross promoting to? But either way, I'm going for it, guys. Just so you know, I'm trying to get a big game.
But I'm doing good. Big games.
It's Friday and I'm happy. It's good to see you guys again. I love these conversations. I love the community that we're building here. And I've always, you know, Jimmy, you and I talked about this for years now, of just, you know, this thing needs to exist. And I'm glad that we're at least attempting to build that thing that we think was missing in the marketplace.
That's right. Very well said. All right. Let's, before we get into our roster build of the front three, though, there is some reporting being done by our friend, Stephen Goff of the Washington Post. And he wrote just yesterday, a few weeks from naming the June roster, Berhalter said he plans to invite two players who weren't part of the qualifying effort, forward Haji Wright and center back Cameron Carter-Vickers. Both are only 24, which is crazy. I feel like we've been talking about Cameron Carter-Vickers for years and years and years now. Both have been away from the U.S. squad since 2019. And as we know, they're both enjoying fine seasons in Europe. Now, Berhalter also said in this article, Stephen Goff, he's looking to extend a first-time invitation to a young dual national who is yet to play at the senior level. He declined to identify the player or the position. But Charlie Davies, I'm coming to you first. What do you think about Haji Wright and Cameron Carter-Vickers coming in? And what's your guess on this young dual national who's never represented us before? And do you think we'll get this player to get in there with us? Can we lure another dual national to join us?
What I will say is I like the call-ups of Cameron Carter-Vickers and Haji Wright, because for U.S. men's national team, if you're doing it with your club in Europe, you deserve a call-up. Then that doesn't mean you deserve to be starting and playing, but you deserve a call-up. And that's how it's always been. Players who are performing and who are consistent deserve a call-up. And then it's up to you to show in these training sessions that you deserve some time. And If you are performing in training, then you typically get rewarded with minutes. So I like that. And it makes, I think, other U.S. men's national team players or players who could play for the U.S. men's national team, it kind of gives you hope that if you are doing it, you do get the call up and it's justified. So therefore you have credibility. And for players who are out there who maybe have the hope of playing with the U.S. men's national team, you know, if you do deliver, you do get the opportunity.
Okay. And so you're cool with Haji, right? Obviously scoring goals in Turkey.
Yes.
Cameron Carter-Vickers doing the business for Celtic this year. Who's your guest though on the dual national? I mean, we got Malik Tillman potentially from Bayern Munich. Mm-hmm. We have Florian Balogun that is on loan from Arsenal to Middlesbrough.
Give me either. I prefer Balogun because he's had, you know, the Arsenal experience in the academy, similar to our guy, Yunus Musa. So when I'm thinking about players coming up through the right system, technically and tactically, Florian Balogun for me would probably be, and I think he's a little bit more mature, would probably be a great addition to the U.S. men's national team in terms of what he can provide, his experience, and then getting an opportunity. I mean, that's what Yunus Musa took. I'm going with an opportunity. I think for Florian Balogun, same thing. A little difficult to break into the England national team. For the U.S., at the striker position, it's really uncertain. And for him to get an opportunity to say, you know what, I'm going to take this chance with the 2026 World Cup on the horizon. This is probably going to be best for me and my development. And also, I get to connect with my roots.
Okay. And then Heath, Haji Wright, I just want to say that he scored 7 goals in his last 7 games for Antalyaspor.
Antalyaspor.
Antalyaspor. So close to my first try. Antalyaspor. and he did it. His last game was against the team that ended up winning the league, Trabzonspor, which was really impressive for him to obviously against the top competition in the Super League in Turkey. And then Cameron Carter-Vickers, you know, well on his way to winning the Scottish Premiership with Celtic this particular season. Also a team that Virgil van Dijk got his, you know, really big start was with Celtic as well. So at 24, even though it felt like Cameron Carter-Vickers, and Berhalter said this before, that he's a known quantity, he knows what he can do. To Charlie's point, Heath, sometimes players evolve. Sometimes players start to find their form. And especially as a center back, I think it's important as these guys mature and they see more plays and get more experience that it's worth bringing them back in just to say, okay, we're going to give you another crack at this and we'll see how you do.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Haji Wright, he's an interesting one just because of the fact that he had a very, you know, he was, I don't know if you remember this, it was like, I don't know, six years ago, but he signed with the New York Cosmos as his first pro contract. And it was a little bit, it was Cosmos B and then Cosmos, and it was a little bit of a weird one because he was a young talent. I believe he was a youth international, and you were like, how do we do? And part of this was sort of this plan of NASL being able to get these players through and then out of the league quicker, without having these, you know, year in and year out options and be a player pathway. It's actually worked out well for him. He did well at Sunder Juska and then now at Antalyaspor. I like the idea of bringing him in because he's proven himself now. And I think he was the one that was kind of caught up with this controversy of just sort of left the club without the agreement in place and whatever. But now it seems like he's proven himself, which is great. The Turkish league is a fun league to watch and it's good to see him doing well.
Okay, Sorry.
When I look at Cameron Carter-Vickers, this one's interesting to me because I feel like under what Greg truly wants, Cameron Carter-Vickers doesn't make sense because he doesn't have the feet for our center backs. But I think we've accepted and we've defaulted back to a more traditional center back pairing that's athletic, that's big, that can cover ground. And the way in which they build up or build out, I think, is secondary. And I think that's naturally the way that we've fallen back because we haven't been able to figure that out, right? We obviously don't have John Anthony Brooks, who's our best on the ball. I don't think anybody else besides that is really great at playing out of back, but they can do it well enough. Cameron Carter-Vickers really struggles with the ball at his feet. I don't want to say really struggles, but when I say in comparison to the other center back options, it'll be interesting to see now how much of that has gotten better, considering he's not playing in necessarily a possession-based league, but he is in a league where they are going to control more of the possession on the team, considering they are the bigger team in all the matches outside of when they play against Rangers. So that's the other one that I like. The last thing I'll say in sort of the intro of these players is Balogun is interesting to me because he's getting a run of form now on loan, but he is 20 years old. And 20 years old is no longer, and this is the problem when you come through some of these bigger academies and where you go to get first team minutes at 20 now. That's what we were all in our era was like the ideal age of getting minutes. If you look at our national team now, most of these guys are getting minutes at 17, 18, 19. And that's a big gap of development that I think is missing for Balogun. And of course, he's getting minutes in the reserves and things like that. That I want to see him start to establish himself as a player that's playing consistently at 20 years old. But again, Yunus Musa was one that was playing young. He came in and you're like, wow, what a player. Hopefully if it's Balogun, I'm not sure how to pronounce it correctly, comes in, I would love to see him be able to prove like, hey, if he can get his club situation right, look at the potential this guy has in the national team.
Okay, so when we see Cameron Carter-Vickers and Haji Wright coming in, Charlie, I'll come back to you on this. Do you think that's the end of John Brooks, who actually looked pretty good against Wolfsburg and scored this past weekend, and a Josh Sargent, who unfortunately not only got relegated with Norwich, but also got hurt? I mean, are we starting to get to that time now where these guys, no matter what they say publicly, it's done and dusted, even though the writing was on the wall, but now it feels like if we're starting to look at other options that aren't these guys, that they're pretty much done? And unless they go, I guess, on some incredible hot streak, it's harder for a center back, I think, as opposed to Josh Sargent could maybe go into the championship with Norwich next year and score 10 and 10 games. And you're like, all right, we got to bring him. But, you know, do you feel like it's done for those guys and some others?
I don't think it's done, but I would say there are a number of center backs ahead of him in the pecking order. Mm-hmm. And you look at the U.S. men's national team in the striker position too. I feel like those positions in particular, people can move up and down rather quickly. And I think with John Brooks's case, he just has to continue to keep playing and be get consistent minutes and be successful. His next move is going to be crucial. If he gets in a good spot, let's say he comes to MLS and he's lights out, he's going to get called back in, because in MLS, there's a lot of athletic strikers. There's a lot of space in behind. And if he can, neutralize a lot of these attackers, he's going to get another chance. But if he goes to another place in Europe and isn't playing well, or it's kind of up and down, he's not going to get another chance.
Yeah, I think he's out. I think Greg has made a decision on him for a number of reasons, whatever those reasons are. And I think it's hard for me to see bringing him back in, because I don't think Greg wants him in his plans. And I think he's a distraction. And if you bring him in, we know that John Anthony Brooks is capable of putting together a couple of like lights out performances. And I think that presents a bigger problem than I think that he wants in terms of the media, in terms of everything, in terms of the concentration or distractions within the team. Otherwise, I'm not sure why that wasn't the case throughout qualifying.
Yeah,
like why?
Yeah.
I just don't know when the right. I could be wrong. I want him in. By the way, when I look at him, when I see his experience,
think of injuries. Though, it takes is a couple injuries, and he's back in the picture.
Well, that's the thing. I think that John Brooks, and you guys can maybe throw another name at me, but he's the only one on the outside looking in now that I think, if things don't go well for us in the World Cup at the center back position, everybody's going to be like, oh, well, why didn't we bring in John Brooks? Right. And I can't think of any other player in any other position. No,
there isn't another player,
right? It's him. He's the one. So that's the risk, obviously, that Greg's got to take, and he's got to build his team and the chemistry of the team. And it's not just on the field performances. It's everything mm-hmm. that's intertwined with that as it pertains to building a roster. That's the rub, right?
Let me ask both of you guys this. Have you been disappointed that John Anthony Brooks hasn't been called in? Because when I see him spray a 50-yard ball and we can't break the lines of pressure, I go, wow, he's our best passer. Break lines in a 30-yard ball, crisp into a striker's feet. That's amazing.
From a defender. At the end of the day, I don't care whatsoever. Now and when I was playing, if a defender can pass the ball necessarily, I want you to defend.
Yeah, right.
If your 1v1 defending is spot on, because that ultimately is how this U.S. men's national team is going to really survive and succeed, is when they do get forward in transition, your center backs have to not only cover space, but be superior in 1v1 defending. Whether it is stealing the ball or just the delay, I'm going to delay you from making a run in behind me or getting by me 1v1, that's what I need. That's what I care about. I don't, just like your keeper. Is your keeper great at the feet? No, I don't care if he's great with his feet. I care about shot stopping and keeping the ball from going back in the net and crosses. Right. So for me, center back.
Owning the box, yeah.
Yeah.
1v1, presence, winning the aerial challenges, timing, keeping the line. That for me is what's important.
That's the thing is that Walker Zimmerman has decided that this is his line. He is going to own when we step, when we drop. And it's really, really important. We've talked about this before, Jimmy, about having one person that owns that line, right? Because I was, I just spent the last 5 days with youth soccer of a bunch of kids who don't play together regularly against different teams, whether it's the Mexico youth national team, whether it's against club teams. And you can see the difference between somebody who embraces the ownership of that back line and says, hey, when I say step, you're stepping with me. When I say one step, when I say push, when I say drop, you do what I say. And if you're a step off, that's the difference of a goal. That's the difference of being in a tournament and out of a tournament. And I feel like that was, you know, I talked about Jameson Olave in my career as one of the guys who just refused to listen to anything I said. And he'd drop when he wanted to drop, and he'd step when he wanted to step. And even though it was supposed to be my line,
that's why. I don't know.
No, Jameson Olave made a career out of literally tackling the ball off the goal line, because if he was in good positions, he wouldn't have to tackle it off the goal line. But didn't listen to anybody else.
You know what, Charlie? No,
he really got under his skin.
Wait. I feel like we need to get like Olave on the show. We got to get Olave on the show now.
He's brought him up.
He needs to have a platform to defend himself.
Every other time when I became a center back, it was put on me, and I embraced that responsibility of owning that back line. When we drop, where are we in dangerous positions? Is there pressure on the ball? And making sure that I tell my team, because if this messes up, it's on me, right? If I'm going to be a leader.
It's
and if you have somebody
as a left back,
I'm glad you brought that. Yeah. I mean, no center back's ever going to listen.
He's like,
to
no, you're
a left back.
Stop it.
You're on the left back.
I was so good on the ball as a center back though, guys. I just get Charlie would have loved it. You know,
no, I was going to get geeky a little bit and talk about the line. But you beat me to it, Heath. I think that's really, really important in terms, and I thought we did an excellent job of that in Mexico City against Mexico, where we weren't too deep. We weren't sitting just on top of the box to sit on the top of the box, which is really easy to do if another team's got a lot of possession. Mm-hmm. And we weren't too high. We weren't allowing the big gaps to exist. And obviously it helps if you have an aggressive goalkeeper or a goalkeeper that's good at coming off their line and managing that space. But I thought that Walker and Miles and the back line in general were very disciplined in terms of when to step, when to drop. And I think that helps us transition. It allows our attacking players not to have to drop too deep. It means that our lines, like our midfield line, doesn't get compressed and get flat with our back line. Like our spacing is good in every single way. And ultimately, I remember Richard Goff, if ever this is a throwback to all you boomers out there, but Richard Goff played for Scottish national team, 2 World Cups for them. And he was my teammate in San Jose when I was a rookie. And I pepper him with questions to the point where he's like, can you just stop asking me questions? And the one that stood out to me was, in your position, just put out fires before they start. And it took me a long time to really understand. I mean, I got it, but how do you do it? How do you actually bring that to life and execute it at a high level? And a lot of it's communication. A lot of it is owning that line, like you say, Heath, and taking that responsibility. And when we have guys in the back that can put people in good spots and those people in front of them actually trust what they have to say, everything becomes like a well-oiled machine. And so I thought that I'd seen glimpses of it. And when in one of our hardest games away at Azteca Stadium, I thought our line was spot on for 90 minutes. And I think that was a big reason why we got a result down there. Obviously, we should have won that game. We created the better chances and should have pulled that off. And so I think that's really important. And if it's center back, whether it's Cameron Carter-Vickers, John Anthony Brooks, whoever else comes in, if they're not doing that, it's going to be a detriment to our team. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I'm glad you guys brought that up before I got geeky, that we're all kind of sharing in this geekiness. All right, everybody. If you love In Soccer We Trust, then we love you, especially if you're hitting that like and subscribe button on YouTube. And of course, hitting subscribe and giving us a 5-star review, or at least close to it, right? 4 stars are above, but 5 preferred.
Yep, do it now.
On the podcast platform. Do it right now while you're listening. That would mean a lot. Now, it's time for the roster build. We've done defenders and goalkeepers a couple weeks ago. We did midfielders last week. Now it's time to get into our front three. This one is going to be pretty tasty. Now, our producers, Alex and Dez, challenged us to have the starters for these June friendlies. Friendlies are interesting because that's the time to try things. And because we don't have too many friendlies, this is a great time to experiment, which is why I think Greg Berhalter is considering bringing in these other players. But Greg did also go on to say in his interview that he still wants to stay true to the guys that helped him qualify for the World Cup. So take that into consideration when we pick our choices. Apparently, though, we all pick 3 different starting lineups, so that should be fun. And Charlie, since you're our resident number 9 who has scored big goals for the U.S. men's national team, we'll let you go first because, you know, we're just lowly defenders over here, me and Heath. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm going with my left winger. We all know Christian Pulisic, it's his position. You expect him to play 90 minutes every game. In the World Cup, in the June friendlies, I'd say, yeah, you're going to play with him the majority of the time and get him the most minutes. No surprise there. At center forward, I'd like to see Timothy Weah. I know Jesus Ferreira is balling right now in Major League Soccer. He's playing with a lot of confidence. But I want to see a player who's going to stretch the back lines and be more of a danger in terms of using his pace to open up lanes and be that guy who can also he's shown he can hold up the ball and check into space, but primarily just getting in behind. And then my right winger, because Gio Reyna's injured, and I'd like to see Gio Reyna also play at the 10, Brendan Aaronson. Mm. I'm going to go with Brendan Aaronson as my right winger. He knows exactly how to press. He's been very good in the press, his movement. I still think he's growing and maturing as a player, and mm-hmm. so he's only going to get better. And I think he has a good understanding of how Christian plays, how Timothy Weah moves. And I think with Serginho Dest playing on the right, and him coming inside, mm-hmm. I do think they're going to cause a number of problems for the opponents.
Okay. I like that. No, that's not just mine and Heath's turn coming up, but everybody else that wants to hit us up with their front three starting in these June friendlies, hit us up in the comments on YouTube or hit us up on Twitter at ISWTPod at any time if you're listening to this in podcast form. Now, I do want to give a shout out to Brendan Aaronson. This is what he's done. This is what he's accomplished in the last 18 months. Everybody ready? Sitting down for this. One MLS Supporter Shield, okay, mm-hmm. with the Philadelphia Union. Named MLS Best 11. Two Austrian Bundesliga titles. Two Austrian Cups. And they made history with RB Salzburg by advancing to the Champions League knockout rounds, which is a very big deal for that club. And actually got farther in the competition than their parent club. Well, I don't know, parent club, but their bigger club, RB Leipzig, even though Leipzig just bottled it, by the way, in the Europa League. So that's pretty impressive. Brendan Aaronson, I like that shout, and I'll get into my thoughts here in a second with regard to my lineup. But Heath, what are you going with? Who's your front three for these June friendlies?
Well, here's where it gets a little bit funny, because I had submitted the same player in two positions when we were building this roster.
Of course you did.
Sort of just thinking through, you know, it's weird because people think that maybe that I've just got, or we've got these set lineups and that's all we want to see. But in my head, I'm constantly sort of tinkering and thinking about how do we get, you know, defensively, I think we're pretty sound. But when I think about how do we get a little bit more connected, and what we're seeing here is a little bit backwards on what I would want. I would want Aaronson up top with Musa. But the reason that it's backwards is because I had originally put Musa into two spots. I like Musa in the midfield because I want to get Musa McKinney-Adams as much as possible. We don't know if McKinney will be available. I said, let's go with De La Torre. But then I started thinking about, okay, if we have De La Torre, who's somebody else we could put in there to try in the midfield? And obviously we've passed our midfield three. And how can I get Musa higher up the field where he plays for Valencia? And see if my main goal in putting together our front three was, how do we get our attacking four or five more connected? How do we get them more combination play? How do we bring a different dynamic? Because it clearly hasn't been working. And when it does, we're very good. Again, 7-8 passes, we're in front of goal creating chances. But when it doesn't, our striker is never involved. Our striker just seems to go long periods where maybe it's a counterattack, it's a layoff, and then again, we're breaking out on the counter, which is a big part of it. But I went with, again, left midfield, Pulisic, Jordan Pefok up top, where my whole thing is just give him one more full run. Give him a run. Give him 70 minutes. And if he can't do it, then you know he can't do it. And then whether he makes the roster or not, that's a little bit different. But put him in for a full run. Don't judge him on a missed chance because he got 15 minutes. And I think he should be judged for that because, you know, Charlie would have been judged for that opportunity when he wants to take his chance. I do think there's something to that. But give him a full run. Let's see how he can contribute to the team. I don't remember the last time he had a full run for the team in a big game against a good team. I want to see that. So him up top. And then I went with Aaronson at right midfield with Musa still in the central three. Because, again, Aaronson is another one that when he was at his best, when he was playing well, he was a catalyst for our attack and being more direct in combination play and coming into the pockets, allowing hopefully Serginho Dest to be able to use the space on the width, but be a little bit more withdrawn, which allows him to be more connected to the strikers or connected to potentially whoever that is playing in that 10 spot. So that's sort of my thinking around that, is just trying to find a little more fluidity, trying to have somebody that's a little bit more in between the lines that can connect those lines. Because maybe I've just got recency bias or whatever. I just don't remember a lot in qualifying of good combination play where we're taking risks in high and good areas, where we're actually integrating 2, 3, 4 players into our attack. And it just seems a lot more like Tim Weah down to the end line, cross the ball in, you know, Robinson, cross the ball in.
But couldn't you say that we want to see more of fine tuning that? Like aren't we, and yes. I'll just roll right into my front three here, because yeah. I had Timo Weah out wide, right? Because isn't there something to be said about continuing to build that relationship with Serginho Dest so that Team Aware doesn't necessarily occupy his space and they kind of learn, especially against the Morocco and Uruguay, who are definitely going to push us in ways that maybe we didn't get pushed in qualifying. I feel like with qualifying, we're playing against opponents that are chippy. They're going to battle. They're going to fight, but maybe lack some of that sophistication that we're going to see from some of the players, not all the players, but some of the players we're going to see it on the Uruguayan and Moroccan squads. And it's a good opportunity to tinker. I just wonder if we're going to tinker too much. Yeah. It wouldn't give us the opportunity to make that happen. So I got Timo Weah out wide right. I think kind of,
do you think Aaronson is tinkering?
Like, no, I don't.
Because he was on your or mid qualifying was on your sort of CONCACAF team of like whatever power rankings.
No. And I think there's room for Aaronson to be involved in one of these friendlies. I just wanted to see if we have Musa, if we're looking at my starting lineup now, you can see it. I had Musa in the middle with De La Torre and Adams because McKinney's still hurt, but you got that. It's almost that triangle that we're going to create out wide right, where you have Dest, you have Musa central, and you have Weah up high. How do we coexist with those three players who can all kind of do the same things in that same space?
Yeah.
So that is something I want to explore and continue to fine tune, because you can try to work it out in practice, but doing it in game against a good opponent is very difficult. Go ahead, Charlie.
I would just add, if you know a player is probably not going to start in the World Cup in that certain position, would you give him a run? And the reason I ask that is Jesus Ferreira the answer in the World Cup? Do you think Jesus Ferreira is our starting nine come first game of the World Cup? Or do you see...
I don't think we know. That's the thing. That's a question mark.
And that's why I pose this question. Do you see him being a starter cemented if he continues to play this way? Or because we're looking at Malik Tillman or Florian Balogun or, you know,
Haji Wright,
Timothy Weah, Haji Wright, that it's, I think, better for, I guess, in that sort, or Timothy Weah, to play with one of those players, knowing that he's not probably going to be the guy. So put the players in the positions that you think come World Cup they're going
to
be playing.
No, that's a great question. I guess even yesterday when we had the chance to speak with Jordan Morris, you know, giving him a chance to have 10, 15 minutes at the night.
I don't think he's ready yet, though. I don't think he's ready yet for that.
But let's say, how much is enough time for you as a coach and coaching staff to say, that's my nine, you know? I mean, do you have to give, there's a good comment there, do you give Jesus Ferreira a full 90 minutes so you can kind of see how he deals with the ebbs and flows of a game?
No.
If it's not working out with him for 15 minutes, that's not enough, you know? I mean, you need more of a sample.
I don't think it's one game. I think it's a run of games.
And right, then that's
say,
the thing.
That's my nine. But the problem is they don't have a run of games.
So frustrating. Dude.
Right. So I think for Greg Berhalter, this is the challenge. Let's say you bring in Malik Tillman. That's the guy who comes in. Do you play him in the first game? Do you play him in the second game? And let's say he does well. You stick with him. That's it. There's no more. Because you have to give him time to get used to the players.
I think for the players to get called in that are like Haji Wright, it seems like he's going to get called in. I think you give whoever you want to really give an extended look. Let's say Jesus Ferreira. You give him 60 minutes. And then
that's cruel.
It is, but like Haji Wright, you're getting 30. Like you have to give Haji Wright enough
of
a sample
goal?
Size.
Yeah, what's the goal? What's the goal of Haji Wright coming in to see whether he can? Because
I think there's two things we need to decide. Mm-hmm. Not only do we have to identify our number nine and who's going to start and actually fit in with the rest of our pieces. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But then secondly, we need to find super subs that, hey, in a specific situation, you know, Haji Wright's pretty good when we're up a goal and holding the ball and drawing fouls. Like we need to know these little subtleties and nuances to his game that I'm sure the coaching staff does, but I don't know if all of us are sitting there watching the Turkish Super League to really understand. You know, what he brings to the table. And even if he's playing a certain way for his club, doesn't mean it's going to translate to the same way he's playing for the national team.
I think Jordan Pefoke's a perfect case of that. They brought him in, and in trainings, probably didn't look as good as the numbers that he's producing in Switzerland. So you think about what do they offer the team, and how does the team play? Are they playing to service Jordan Pefoke? They weren't playing to service. They weren't playing in a manner that'll make him look good and play to his strengths. So in this case, I think the striker, you're not necessarily playing to be the best player for this team in terms of like the finishing, and everyone's got to play to you. You're trying to make everyone else around you better. And you look at a player like Olivier Giroud with France, right. They weren't playing to him. Olivier Giroud was playing to make sure that Mbappe and Griezmann were playing to their best ability, because that was the strength of their team. And he allowed them to play at their best.
And we could argue we're similar. We want to somehow release Christian Pulisic, get him in 1v1 situations, or yes. Aaronson or Reyna or Weah on the other side. I mean, there's a lot of
well, that's the combination play that I think is missing, right? Is that,
well, I think actually Ricardo Pepi's maybe our best at that. But
yeah, exactly. Every time that we found Ricardo Pepi underneath and he was able to lay the ball back, where you're getting an Aaronson or you're getting a Weah or you're getting a Gio Reyna, hopefully, or Christian Pulisic facing the field, driving up the field, that's when we've been our most dangerous on the attack. Granted, we've been good on crossing the ball from wide areas because we've been forced to. But very rarely did we have any sort of in, back, out, sort of that pulsing or probing that we want from these quality players that keeps our center forward involved, but also brings our best players into positions where they're best, where it's not Pulisic 40 yards further back on the field, or it's not Pulisic down at the corner flag, sort of detached from the rest of the game.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to dissect here and to get into. Another thing I was thinking is, my secondary front three was similar to what you had, Chuck, where you had Pulisic, you had Weah at the nine, and Aaronson. If we really want to explore it, we have to see it in these upcoming friendlies. I actually had Pulisic, Weah, and Musa, so I kind of had a merge. That was like my third one to look at that I want to see. Musa out wide right, and then Aaronson in the 10, because I think he's good in that spot. He looks comfortable in that spot. And if we wanted to get one more attacking player kind of in our front three, or at least supporting that front three, at times when we have McKinney, Musa, and Adams, maybe we don't have a proper 10, a guy.
Reyna could be a proper 10.
Reyna could do it for sure, but he's not available in these ones because of injury. So that, but yes, in theory, once he's healthy, Reyna would be a nice fit for that. So we're actually walking into a generation, we've already talked about this before, where we have a lot of options once everybody's healthy. It's just a matter of what fits best, and maybe it's situational based on the opponent. Any other second tier or third tier things that you want to see? Charlie, I'll go to you. Go ahead.
Well, I want to address a question from Dan W. He said, is this team too short? Basically for set pieces. And I would
what
say
do we need Peter Crouch out there. What's the story?
I would say, look at the 2010 champions of the World Cup, Spain. I mean, you had a very small team, Pedro and Xavi and Iniesta. But if you mark properly and you prevent, certain set pieces in dangerous areas, and you're tactically aware, it's not an issue. It's not an issue. So, if I'm looking at other players that I want to see, I think it's all at the nine position. So after Haji, right? I think you got to give Jordan Pefok a proper chance from the start and see what he can do. Jordan Pefok is not a super sub. That's not a player you want coming off the bench. He's not going to change the game in terms of pace, and he might be dangerous off of crosses if you're just going to load crosses in, but again, it's very predictable. So if you're getting in behind defenses and they're running towards their goal, that's a time where he can expose you. But if you have back lines who are sitting set back and everything's played in front of them, it's not going to set up well for any striker who relies on crosses. So giving Jordan Pefok a start from the very beginning, I think, would be beneficial. You still got to wait for Daryl Dike to get healthy. You still got to wait for Matthew Hoppe to get in a good club situation. Jordan Morris, again, I think he needs about 6 more months till he gets to peak fitness. And
guess what? He's got 6 more months, so it's nice.
And then I've seen a lot of comments. Josh Sargent, he's got to leave Norwich.
Or stay with them in the championship and blow up like Mitrovic for Fulham or something. I don't know.
It's, you play in a second division in any league, I don't care. It's more of a war. It's a battle. People will tell you there's a lot of games in a short amount of time, and it's a lot of fighting, and it's really, do you get a chance to really develop technically in the championship? So I would like for him to go somewhere else, to a first division club, maybe Major League Soccer, maybe it's Denmark, maybe it's going back to the Bundesliga, but putting yourself in a position to play every week where you're not just fighting and your team's playing long balls and your team is set up just to try and survive. That's not the environment you want to be in.
I guess he had a full season of that so far with Norwich. And from what I understand, he's doing pretty good with all the fighting and stuff, but hasn't led to necessarily hitting the back of the net. And yeah, not really in that too. And not really showcasing what he can do when he has a team that has a little bit more possession.
To be fair, Daryl DK did that well in the championship, right? Of just like owning the box, getting into tight spaces and put himself on the map by being able to scrap out. I mean, that was the target striker that the U.S. national team had for a long time. Somebody occupy the center backs, scrap, fight, draw fouls, get into the box, you know, fight for everything, not super tactical. And then Charlie came along, was a different profile than we had ever had at that striker position, being able to run the channels, chase games, make the game predictable when you're playing defensively. And again, we've got some of those types of energies, whether it's Ricardo Pepi, whether that's Ferreira, whether that's now a Jordan Pefuck in a different way. And so when I think about Sargent, I think about Norwich are going to go in, depending on how they handle this offseason, as the top dogs. Now, we know it's difficult. You get the parachute payments. You do have more resources than other teams in the championship. You really get 1 year to go back up.
And not an ideal situation. Timu Pukki, man. Put some respect on Timu Pukki's name.
But I could see Timu Pukki leaving as well. Maybe not because of the age that he is. So maybe he sticks it out too. Josh Sargent, I've yet to see it like any sort of prolific abilities in front of goal. And as a striker in a single striker system, you kind of always go, there's only so long you can go. He's got the intangible. You said the same about Ricardo Pepi. Intangibles. He helps the team. He makes them better. Gets his two chances in front of goal. You go, get him off the field.
You know what's going to be interesting is that our special guest next week, and I'm just going to say it, is former U.S. men's national team striker Eddie Johnson, who might have to fight back on you saying that Czech had a certain profile that the U.S. men's national team never had before, when I think Eddie was doing some similar things. And so he's going to be on next week, and I can't wait to get his insight on who he thinks should be starting for the U.S. men's national team at striker. He's going to have plenty to say. He has been teammates with all of us for club and country for many years. So I'm excited to see EJ once again and to share some platform with him to get into it. So we're very excited to have Eddie Johnson on next week. Make sure you are ready for that. That's another good reason to subscribe. We're bringing the guests week in and week out for you. Now, I do want to throw out Jordan Pefuck, 5 goals in his last 4 games in the Swiss Super League. He is now leading the Golden Boot race in Switzerland by 4 goals, and there's only 3 games left. Mm. And we don't have too many Americans winning Golden Boots around the world. So that is a very big deal. And to Chuck's point in particular, and Heath, who are both supporting Pefuck to come in, this is as good a reason as any to bring him in. He's in as good a form as you possibly can. So you got to give him another run out. And I don't want his maybe last foray as a national team player to be that one missed opportunity against Mexico. That feels a little bit unfair. My last foray with the national team was a red card in my last ever game. I went out with a blaze of glory, everybody. So
my last MLS game was a red card, so that was cool.
There we go. So me and Heath have that. that bite. Now I have one question before we take our first and only break of the podcast and get into our favorite jersey swaps of all time. Talk about the leak of the new U.S. men's national team jersey. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But Dylan asked a good question. And Heath, I'll come to you first. He says, what about Gio Reyna at the number 9? Do you think Greg would consider a false 9? We've seen Christian Pulisic play there for Chelsea to sometimes good effect. Depends on who they're going up against. I remember Real Madrid in the Champions League semifinals last season in Madrid, where he did a very good job of kind of running in behind, ended up scoring the first goal because of his good work in that 9 spot. I think Timo Weah is kind of our way of compromising and trying another maybe wide player and putting him up top, even though he's probably got more experience in that spot more than others. Would you consider Gio Reyna there, maybe him dropping back to pull a center back into that space so we can have our wingers run in behind a little bit more centrally?
It's weird because when I look at the roster that I built, it's a little bit confused tactically when I look at De La Torre and whatnot, who's a little bit more of a neutral player, a little more possession-based, isn't always going to advance the ball in the way that I'd like. But if I were to put Gio Reyna anywhere that he hasn't been, it's the 10 spot. Mm-hmm. I think him in the 10 spot could be unbelievable. Now, that pushes Weston McKennie a little bit more defensively. Maybe that means you can push Yunus Musah maybe onto the wing, or maybe he's out of the lineup if you're going to have McKennie and Adams. So, but if I were to think about where Gio Reyna could help to, again, triangulate the entire field, it'd be the 10 spot versus being sort of a little more isolated on the wing, a little bit more of a one-on-one. We've seen in good and tight spaces, he's so good at combination play, similar to Christian Pulisic, where I just sometimes wonder, like, how do we get Christian Pulisic closer to everyone else because he can disrupt that? That's where I would like him, but not at the false 9, not up there by himself, at least not at the moment.
Charlie, I'm going to throw this one to you off of what Heath is just saying. Do you think that Gio Reyna and or Brendan Aaronson at the 10 spot could take away from where Christian Pulisic likes to pick up the ball, because he likes to pick up the ball in that kind of gap in between the center back and the outside back, but a little bit deeper. And that makes me a little bit nervous, because when we have McKinney, Adams, and Musa, those guys don't really seem to get in the way of Christian to find that ball in that space. But I think he could run into Reyna and Aaronson.
I would say good that he takes up that space, because that's not where we want Christian Pulisic. Mm-hmm, we want Christian Pulisic isolated and playing high and pushing the right outside back into bad positions, forcing the right center back to go out to try and help and defend when he's 1v1, creating space for the inside for players to take advantage of it. That's where the center forward has to make a name for himself. Therefore, when that center forward is firing, now that right center back can't go out there. And that's what opens up the game, Christian Pulisic. We don't want him to keep coming inside, so then he's forced to play against three players or four players. In the final third, that's when you can get creative and you can come inside. But he's coming too deep in the midfield and then coming inside.
Right.
And by that time, three or four players collapse on him. So I think it's good if you bring a 10. Right now, the reason he's coming inside is because there is no bridge between the midfield and the nine. So he feels he has to come inside to close the gap, because that space is too vast. Because typically, if it's Ricardo Pepi or Jordan Pefok, or not so much Jesus Ferreira because he loves to check, but typically there's a huge gap and he comes inside to fill that gap.
I will say that I don't think Pulisic likes to stand on the sideline. I think he likes to drift in the middle and find the ball and find those pockets and get it and run.
But it's where he does it.
It's true, but I feel like our spacing as a team might be better, even though we have Anthony Robinson in theory bombing forward to kind of occupy that space. But if the longer he stays out wide, the more those gaps exist for a Gio Reyna or a number 10 or somebody to get the ball there, and then he can come in and then allow Anthony to overlap. These are the little things that I think are important, and that's why these friendlies are important. And I wish we had 10 more of them before the World Cup.
I would
add, we only have four.
to Heath, as far as Daryl Dike crushing it in the championship, he did crush it. But when he got his opportunity with the U.S. Men's National Team in Gold Cup, he didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he didn't have it is because the style flips, and you have to be able to adjust to whatever the situation is. And in terms of Gold Cup, now you're playing against teams who are going to defend, and you got to have a first touch, and you got to be able to play in tight spaces. And that's where his game needs to really improve on the national team level. So when you're talking about World Cups as your nine, probably not going to be a strong favorite, because the touch has to be there and your technique has to be there. And that's one of the areas that was really lacking and needs to improve.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Heath, rebuttal?
No, I agree with what he said on that one.
All right, everybody, we're going to take our first and only break right now. And guys, I don't know if you saw the news or not.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
But a jersey that Diego Armando Maradona wore in the 1986 World Cup, where he scored the hand of God, just went for £8 million or something in an auction. That is ridiculous, by the way. So fair play to the defender, I believe, from England, who made a little cheddar with that. But what a jersey swap. That is the most epic of all time. I'm going to come to you, Hollywood Heath Pierce, because I already know that Charlie's ready to flex all over us. He's already got his Zlatan Ibrahimovic Sweden jersey on. And so and I know he's got more than that. That's the scary part. Hollywood Heath, who's the best jersey swap or maybe the most intriguing or the funniest story? Like, what do you got for us?
I don't have a funny story on this one, but in the same theme of Maradona and Argentina, I'm going to go with this. This is the flex of the week. We're going to make this segment. So you got to pace myself. You know, I can't go with my big winners right now. But 2008, we played. Let me give you the exact number. We played in
exactly where he's going with this.
U.S. versus Argentina in East Rutherford, New Jersey, in front of 78,682 to a scoreless draw. I believe, if I remember correctly, Pablo Mascherini was sent off. Who else was sent off? Javier Mascherano was.
Act like you're not looking at the match log right now.
I am. I'm literally looking at it right now. Like, well, I believe
that this happened.
I didn't remember that it was Mascherano that got sent off, but I remember there was two red cards. It was a scoreless draw. It was a crazy rain. And I played in that game, and there's no name on it because that's the way it is. Should I put the name on it?
That's not the way it is. He just bought us at the store. But go ahead.
This is, actually, the Brazil ones didn't have it either. And I got
two. Is that Di Maria? Who's that?
No, this is Sergio Kun Aguero.
Oh, wow.
And so when I posted it the first time, right, I get this picture, I posted on social media. You know, at the time, I didn't know much about photography, so I'm like ripping it off the internet, and then I'm screenshotting it. And by the time I post it, it's lost basically all of its crisp quality. And I'm like, traded shirts this day as a throwback with Sergio Kun Aguero, and I think he was like 20 years old back then, maybe even younger. And people like, that's not him, that's Carlos Tevez. And I'm like, no, I remember. Like, I argued with people in my comments for an entire day until I posted the next photo again that showed the match log of like jersey number, who was wearing it. And this was the day, Jimmy and Charlie, it was in Argentina where Messi was not in the starting lineup. And I guess I do have a little story. I'll make this quick. Messi was not in the starting lineup. The promoters went and told the Argentinian national team, hey, based on this contract, and this is not confirmed, but this is what we were told. Based on this promotional contract, you're supposed to be playing your best team. And if Messi's available, he should be starting in this game. He didn't warm up, wasn't in the lineup that we knew about, and then came out walking out to start the game, played a half, and then came off the field.
I remember that half too.
It was one of those.
He was balling it up too.
Yeah. Oh, he made
the
everybody.
The guy doesn't need to warm up. That's how special he is.
Yeah, I think they had threatened to not pay like whatever the match promotion was because they were like, hey, we promoted based on this. He's got to play.
Right.
Didn't warm up, came out and played, was better than all of us. But I ended up getting this Kun Aguero jersey, which at the time I didn't know was going to be great because he was, I believe, at Atletico Madrid. And he ended up becoming obviously one of the greatest or the greatest goal scorer for Man City, but one of the greatest goal scorers in Premier League history. Kind of cool.
All right. And Chuck, that's a good one. Chuck, what about you?
It's a great one. So I'm rocking Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
We know.
From the friendly in 2008. And I was playing in Sweden. So it was in Gothenburg. It was a pretty cool experience. And I just remember being so surprised at how big Zlatan is.
Game at the Gamla Ullevi?
Yeah. One funny story before I get into the jerseys.
Yeah, do
is, so Spain, Confederations Cup, we beat them. And the whole time I was thinking, once that final whistle blew, who am I switching jerseys with? I was a huge fan of Fernando Torres. I was a huge fan of Cesc Fabregas because I'm an Arsenal fan. So I'm like, I got to get him. And then I think just out of respect, playing against Carlos Puyol, and he was such a fierce competitor and bumping me the whole time, kicking me off the ball, you know, and I didn't back down. And I won a couple of headers over him. I said, yeah, you know, like I'm feeling good about myself. But after them and Sergio Ramos, but after the game, they all take off. They literally sprint off the field. And I'm like, do I chase him? I see Fernando Torres swapping jerseys with Gooch, and I'm like, oh, hell no. But this little guy comes walking over, and he's got his like training bib on. He didn't play. And he's like kind of like walking around like if anyone would trade jerseys. And I was looking at him like, no, I'm all set or whatever.
Charlie. Hey, don't forget, this is Charlie. This is Charlie peak form right now, right? Charlie's on top.
Charlie just gave him, I'm all set.
Charlie was like, no, I'll give you mine, but you can keep yours type of thing.
I'm all set. He said, I'm all set.
And it was Juan Mata. And I'm just like,
oh man. Like the nicest guy ever. Too.
Yeah, and exactly how he was. He was like, you know, just walk around. And I was just like, yeah, all right. And just kind of walk by him. So I feel bad about that. But, my favorite jersey of all time, because of the significance, he was my role model. Heath, you got to play with him. It was Thierry Henry ever since I was a kid. So let me show you a little bit of what I got.
This is for the YouTube audience to verify that Charlie's not lying. But
we got the Thierry Henry here. Okay.
Yeah, wait.
He's going to flex the closet. You want me to flex the closet? Let's go.
Confederations Cup.
I didn't realize behind the rich mahogany was his secret stash of jerseys.
The Kaká.
You got the Landon Donovan, I see.
We got the Landon the MLS Cup Final 2014.
I thought this was just a flex of the week. Jimmy.
I know.
Look at it. I got some Lucio, Ashley Cole. I mean, are we doing the whole flex?
I guess. I don't know what's happening here, Heath. He's got bees. It's just.
And then.
He's still going, Heath. He's still going.
For those of you that are just listening to this, Charlie's this just taking us into.
We got a Tyler Adams Leipzig jersey. He sent me, and then Bedoya.
You know what? I'm kind of sad about Heath. Is that? There's no Conrad or Pierce's in there, but
hey, you never sent me one.
Okay. Oh man, I don't have a Chuck one either, though. So don't tell me.
I don't want to.
I asked one.
Oh yeah, man, that's a good
Greg
one.
Greg Vanderbilt.
Yeah, great one. Yeah. So Chuck's out here flexing for a month and not just Zach Steffen. I have a Zach Steffen signed one too.
Well, the idea, Jimmy, was that we'd make this a weekly flex. We could walk through our jersey.
Iceland Euros kit. One of my teammates.
Wow. That's a good one. I'm kind of jealous you got an Iceland national team.
You know, I thought it would be great if we could just do this weekly, Jimmy, where we share a jersey and a story as like, you know, flex of the week. But Charlie just literally showed us his whole closet and I think ruined the entire brand new segment we were going to build out. Charlie, this was meant to be a flex of the week, and then next week we'd have flex of the week, and you just took us into your walk-in closet and showed us everything, you know.
Yeah, like, he went nuclear on us. You know, took the nuclear option.
He was so excited, though. Charlie's got those in there, and he's like, "One of these days, someone's gonna ask.
One of these days, you're gonna ask."
And I think of all the things that I've collected, and I know I get to pass it on to my kids, right? Yeah. So I'm pumped as hell, and my favorite kit that Heath has as well. Is the Confederations Cup kit that I had the whole team sign.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
cool.
And I look at that on the wall every day and I'm like, you know, that was that magic moment. Cause we had such a group. I mean, talk about the safaris that we were taking together and man.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's
of course.
The amount of times, by the way, that I get asked about, hey, weren't you guys in a final in Confederations Cup? And well, first they asked if I played and then I say no, but I was there. and then I got to walk them through like, man, that's crazy. Didn't you guys beat Spain? I'm like, yes, we did. And they go, weren't you winning against Brazil? I'm like, yes, we were. And then they're like, and then Brazil did Brazil. And I was like, yes, they did. And that's like the whole conversation on a weekly basis, especially with Brazilians, because I'm around a lot of Brazilians here in LA and it's kind of crazy.
That, you know what? That we were up Tuesday.
Oh, I got that Pato jersey from that game.
That's a good one too.
Yeah.
Jimmy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I wasn't part of that team, so I'm feeling a little bit left out. But I remember the final. We were up 2-0 at half. I remember B scored or like set up a great breakaway or a good transition play off of their corner, which was awesome. Like one of the best goals I think we've ever scored as a team against Brazil. But we gave up a goal like right after halftime, and you could just see like,
You say B's did that?
No, B's off of a corner. He like made the pass that unlocked something that
Kaká did that to us off of a corner in the first game. Oh,
was
in
that,
the second game.
Was that Kaká? Okay. You know what? I'm getting it all.
Wait, are you talking about the Confeds Cup final?
Yeah, the final.
On the second goal to Landon.
Yes.
That was off the corner.
That was their corner.
Charlie's talking about himself right now. He's about to talk about
himself. I'm not saying anything. It was Heath, you know what happened.
I wasn't on the team, so I can't remember every single minute of it.
It came out
to Rico.
Rico.
And then Rico. Let me fly. Just played the ball in front. I took off down the left flank, and it was Landon who was.
So it wasn't B. B's wasn't involved in the play then.
No.
Got it. Cool. All right. Well, I've been giving Bees credit for years. So now I'm going to give it to Rico. I want to
hear your story, because one of my biggest regrets, because I saw this, what's the biggest regret is that game we played against Argentina in the Copa America.
Yes.
And that was probably the most stacked team I've ever seen in my life, coming out with Messi.
Oh, I would have paid for Raquel May.
I punched myself thinking about Aymar and Tevez and, you know, all these legendary.
We were on the team Verone. Together in 2007 Copa America.
Keep it going.
Zanetti, who put Ayala, Justin Knapp in his pocket.
Cambiasso.
That team was sick. So I asked Raquel May for his jersey after the game.
Oh.
And he acted like I wasn't standing there. He just pretended like he wouldn't look at me. So, but the reason is, let me give you some backstory. We went up 1-0 in that game.
Yeah.
And you guys remember this. Raquel May didn't tie his shoes for the first 20 minutes of the game. And I was like, who is this MF-er, dude? Like, who doesn't tie their shoes? It's not like this is a friendly. This is an official sanctioned game by FIFA. This is a Copa America. And this dude doesn't tie his shoes. So we score first, right? Eddie gets in behind and it's a foul and he scores the penalty. We're up 1-0. And as that happens, we go to celebrate with Eddie. I grab Raquel May's arm and I point at his shoes. Hey, you should tie those. And then I go celebrate with the guys. Because I was pissed. I felt a little disrespected. Now, in hindsight, talk about regrets.
By the way, for the record, Raquel May played one touch that entire game and never lost the ball.
Listen.
It was insane.
No. It gets even better. So he doesn't tie his shoes right away after I say something. But about 10 or 15 minutes later, before a free kick, he ties his shoes. He ties his shoes before the free kick. And he drops in a dime, and they end up scoring to make it 1-1. And I was like, why did I tell that guy to tie his goddamn shoes? Now, on that play, by the way, we held everybody offside, except Marvell Wynn, in his first ever cap, playing right back, was just hanging out, not paying attention to the rest of the line, and that's what held him on. Now, listen, I'm not blaming Marvell. That's going to be a hard game for anybody, whether it's your first cap or your 50th. But the fact that we started somebody in their first cap against a team that was that stacked,
All I know is Heath's nemesis, Johnny Bornstein, locked down Messi for at least 60 minutes in that game.
Did you trade shirts? Did you trade a shirt in that game?
I went for Raquel May, and when he said he came to the Charlie Davies, I'm all set.
You gave up.
Dude, we lost. So my confidence was already shot because we lost. And I was like, I made my play. I don't know who to ask now. But in hindsight, I wish I would have got Zanetti's. That guy, what a player.
I'm going to say my Brazil story for the next week when Eddie Johnson's on with us, because he stole my swap that I had prearranged. Yeah. But I'll get to that one.
How does that happen?
We had a prearranged swap in the tunnel, and then I got subbed off. So when I came on, Eddie hit that sprint button when the game ended. Like, you know how fast Eddie was.
Who did he get?
That sprint button? Rubinho.
Just say who it is.
Rubinho.
Yeah.
Listen.
And remember when? I don't know if either of you guys in that game, Rubinho took Steve Cherundolo to the corner flag and did something to him that was so unfair and unjust.
I remember it. I think Cherundolo lost about 3 years of his life.
Don't do it to Stevie right now. We lost the game, and in the locker room, everybody was telling Steve that he's got to go look for his shoes back on the corner flag because he lost most of his shoes. It was one of the most unbelievable things. And but the one story I wanted to tell, and I actually wanted to ask you guys while we were on the subject, the only time I got the apple pie to the face was also against Spain, Santander. We lost 81st minute. Xavi scores on us. We defended for 90 minutes. It was one of those games where you just watch them and you're like, they're good. We're not as good. and it was like a 10:30 kickoff. We didn't get back to the hotel till like 2 o'clock in the morning. We were flying to New York for that Argentina game. But after the game, I asked like 7 or 8 guys, like, just, I was just one of the few times where I was just like, you know what? You're going to look back and regret if you just don't like beg for one of these things. And I asked like 7 or 8 guys kindly in Spanish, and each one of them said, I promised it for my grandmother. And they all said the exact same thing. And it was like that they had been given like advice on how not to trade shirts with crap players.
Wow.
And they were like,
they got you.
I had, this is when Sergio Ramos was a right back. So I played against him.
David Silva was on my side, as well. And so I was like, I'll take anybody though, like anybody,
right,
including Senna in the midfield. Like, I don't care who it was, just give me anybody. And each one of them gave me the same exact answer. I promised it for my grandma, and I was like, to be fair, the consistency there, I can't be mad, but also I was livid inside.
You gotta do the prearranged agreement next time. Although I'll tell you this, Thierry Henry said if anyone came to him before the game or during the game about a jersey swap, he lost respect. He said, I can't. But
to be fair, the prearranged with the Brazilians was only followed by them asking what's going on tonight.
Like, I remember Roberto was one of those guys.
Yeah, at the point that they're asking, like, yo, what's going down in Chicago tonight? You kind of are like, okay, we've broken the ice. I don't think it would be like, you're asking me where to go out tonight. I'm gonna ask for that jersey back, you know?
No, I the one time that I had a lock on somebody, because I think I saw it the same as you. I wanted to get a jersey with somebody I competed against.
Yes.
And not just somebody that was, all the way across the field. So against the second game we had in that Copa America was against Paraguay. And I was going up 90 minutes against Roque Santa Cruz. So I just thought that would be an easy get after the game. I go up to him.
Didn't he score off of a Casey Keller mistake or something like that? Or
no, that was Cardozo, and I don't really want to talk about it. Yeah, because I'm still burned about it. Because it wasn't my fault, but Bob Bradley blamed me for it.
I feel like we should have done better in that tournament than we did.
We should have, 100%, 100%. We should get into that one day and watch old highlights together with everybody. But in that game, so I went up to Roque Santa Cruz and said, hey, let's swap. And he's like, Taylor Twellman guy already asked for it. I'm like, Taylor Twellman? You're not even next to him on the field. I was hot.
Wasn't even playing, too. Yeah. It's like, what the?
No, Taylor Twellman was wearing his jersey was too tight, and he was taping his thumb or whatever the hell he was doing. But but I was pissed. I'm like, Taylor, dude, you can't go for players. So I got somebody from Paraguay, like one of their defenders. But and to your point, Heath, like I wanted that memento of that moment, right? When I see that jersey, I immediately go back to that game and think, oh, I go through all of it, the good and the bad, some of my emotions, frustration, whatever it is. But that jersey is what triggers it for me in a way that I wanted it. That's why I'm
getting who's your best? So who's your best?
So my best was, and here's the story. In 2006, leading up to the World Cup, there were four of us from Kansas City that were on the bubble to make the team. And it was me, Eddie Johnson, Josh Wolf, and Kerry Zavagnin. The roster comes out, and Kerry Zavagnin's the only one left off. Okay. And guy's shattered. He's 30. They bring John O'Brien and Johnny. I love Johnny O, one of our best players ever, by the way, even though he wasn't healthy for that 06.
I've got an O'Brien Ajax jersey. Dude, I'll share.
How good is John O'Brien, by the way? The fact that he's like phenomenal. A PhD in psychology now is also speaks to how eccentric and amazing John O'Brien is and how talented he is. But so John O'Brien comes, carries absolutely gutted. So we're you have that 3 or 4 weeks before you go into World Cup camp and you're like, just don't get hurt. Just don't get hurt. You're just playing not to get hurt for those 4 weeks. And Kerry's the guy's depressed for sure. So I'm like, man, this guy's my roommate on the road at times. I got to do something. So I say, hey, Kerry, the three teams are playing, Czech Republic, Italy, and Ghana. If I can get any player jersey from those three teams, who would you want? And he goes, oh, man, he's thinking about it. He's like, I guess Andrea Pirlo, if I had a choice, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm on it. So fast forward to the World Cup. I come on in the Italy game. We end up getting a historic result, 1-1. We're down a man. Super amazing game. People still talk to me about that game. And after the game, Alessandro Del Piero comes up to me. Del Piero comes up to me and says, do you want to swap? And I gave Del Piero the I'm all set. I'm going to go get Pirlo's instead.
Oh, my gosh.
I waved off.
Are you out of your mind?
I know. But I had made a promise, man. I was going to see it through. Listen, I love Andrea Pirlo, too. But when Del Piero comes up to you.
It doesn't matter. At that point, and you go into the locker room after.
Yep.
Hey, I need to get Pirlo's too.
I know.
Trade that first half jersey.
I'm furious with you.
So listen, though.
Juan Mata's one. Del Piero is a whole nother.
Dude. But I was so like, I'm getting Pirlo's. Like I said it to him. I'm going to do it. I went and got Andrea Pirlo's jersey. And they were thrilled. The Italians, I've never had a team, an opposing team. And maybe because we drew 1-1 and they really just respected our performance and our grit and our desire to get a result. And they were even after the game in the locker room, they still were looking to trade jerseys with us because
they collect shorts.
It's crazy. So they were all into it. And I was kind of surprised by that because this was on the heels of some other times where you're getting a little spurned. But I went and got Pirlo's. I switched with them. And when I came back to Kansas City, I gave that jersey to Carey Zavagnin, which is why I can't show it to you for you now. And he's got it framed and up in his house. And okay, it might be a memento of what he didn't have, but I thought that I got to follow through and do what I said.
What's the best of the rest, Ben, that you have?
The best of the rest, I got Michael Ballack. Right. I traded jerseys with him. I'll have to show you in there.
Okay. Was that the 06 pre-World Cup game?
Yes, it was in Germany.
That's a baller one.
I did my best to get anyone because, you know, in the early days, you only get to keep one, right? That's what they say. You learned after a while, you could just start.
Yeah,
snatching
you could
them
just
all.
Keep anything. Yeah.
But you only keep one. So like, I was like, dude, I don't know if I'm ever going to play a national team a game. I need to keep a few of these. Right. So a few first ones I'm keeping and I don't have any trades. And then I wanted anybody's from the Germany one. Cause that was the first time I played in a crazy stadium. It was wild. I got a Womyela's from that Germany game, but yeah, Ballack, man, he scored a banger of a header in that game. And I remember being like, this guy's massive. Yeah.
That's a big one.
That's a really big one.
I'm proud of you for that one. Thank you. Our back four in that game, Corey Gibbs, Greg Berhalter, me, Steve Cherundolo.
Wow.
Yeah. What a back four, huh? Unbelievable. That is. You know what? Me and Greg were screaming at each other just to like get organized. And he was 3 feet from me. We couldn't hear each other. That's how loud it was. It was at Borussia Dortmund Stadium.
I told that same story to when I came on for Corey. And then Bobby Convy came in front of me and I was like, dude, either this guy is just doing whatever he wants or he can't it was the first time I was like, oh, this is how you play Champions League level football, because you got to be able to play with your eyes and your legs. Cause when you're coming from somewhere else where you can just scream left and right to organize and make the game really simple, you realize how easy that is. When you can't hear anything, you're like, man, I'm in another planet. But that's a great shout.
No, I mean, that was my first introduction to Philipp Lahm as well. I mean, seeing him up close. And I think our best version of Philipp Lahm that we've ever had is Steve Cherundolo, like small little guy, super smart, great feet, always knew where to be, great positioning. But seeing Lahm up top, who was playing left back, and he'd be bombing forward. I've got Ballack to my left and Lahm dribbling at me. That was a special experience. And you learn a lot about yourself and how good you think you are when you're playing against some of the world's best
players. Cherundolo scored. He hit that ball over the top to Eddie Johnson, who ran into Oliver Kahn and then it just rolled past both of them.
I had drug testing after that game with Oliver Kahn, and he was so pissed he gave up that goal because he was competing with Jens Lehmann for the starting spot. And Lehmann ended up starting most of the games in the 06 World Cup. He was just grunting the whole time. I've never seen that guy had longer arms than any other person I've ever seen in my whole entire life. So imagine sitting, you can't pee after a game. You're sitting there with a disgruntled German for an hour and a half, just looking at each other. Yeah, that was that's a story for another time. All right, everybody, we are done with In Soccer We Trust. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Like always, make sure you hit like and subscribe on the YouTubes and hit subscribe on any podcast platform that you enjoy this podcast. We love being a part of this whole community that we're growing and building, and we're excited that you're a part of it as well. We will see you next week. We got Eddie Johnson, former U.S. men's national team striker, joining us, and we've got some other special shows planned for you. So on behalf of producer Des and Alex and Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conrad saying thank you for listening to In Soccer We Trust, and we will see you next time. Later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.